I said, just to have the exposure to new cultures, new world, new thinking, you know, the elephant in the room around race relations, you know, socioeconomic considerations. It was a big deal. And I can be very honest and reflective of that. You know, that was just a solid foundation for me to even navigate waters at the collegiate level and now in the professional ranks.
Today, I'm joined by a new friend and a new colleague of mine, Anwar McQueen. We're going to have a tremendous conversation today about how he used the vehicle of basketball to create opportunity and bring it back into the game and back into the industry. He's full of passion, a lot of good news on the way with his organization. I can't wait to jump into it. Anwar, welcome.
Thank you so much, Paxton, for having me. I'm excited to meet your audience and to share my journey on this wonderful platform.
Yeah, man, I appreciate it. It's so cool that we can connect so easily with, I'm in New York and you're obviously on the West Coast. Where are you on the West Coast?
I'm in Northern California, so the Bay Area, Oakland, California to be specifically. But for your viewers, the Bay Area is fine to geotag me.
Yeah, no worries. Awesome, man. So it's cool because right before we jumped on this call, and we were kind of having a little bit of a chat before we hit the record button. And you were just explaining to me how that there was some big news in regards to your organization and team. We're going to get there because it's pretty profound. It's actually going to make a lot of waves in, you know, the history of what you're doing, which is really cool. So I can't wait to bring that up. But I really want to dive into a little bit about, of your past. Here in Cool Down Conversations, we really try and focus on a vehicle in sports that you've used and leveraged and stewarded to kind of create opportunity in your own life. It's opened up doors for others, opened up doors for yourself. And that was the vehicle of basketball. So where did that love begin?
Yeah, at a very young age. So I grew up in Washington, D.C. in the inner city, specifically the Clifton Terrace projects, really notorious for crime and drugs. And so I think it was in 82, 81, the police, the Metropolitan Police Department started opening up police boys and girls club in the various police districts. So we were third district, number 10 police and boys and girls club. And I vividly remember like this was yesterday, a big deal lying around the corner. It was just a destination for people to go to after school. And I think I was 8 years old at the time. And so to go into a community space where you're going to get coaching, you know, safety, et cetera, I was kind of at the right place at the right time. And for my opportunity, if you will, I was always, you know, into sports, pretty good at basketball, but that was my first kind of organized opportunity to put these individual skills, combine them with the community and see where I stood. And so, looking back on that over 30 years now, that's where it started for me.
Awesome. Okay. So then you obviously had this opportunity came into your life at a young age, and then you slowly kind of stuck around, one out of necessity, because it just gave you a place to kind of be safe, to play ball, to get back into community. And then when was it that you said, hey, you know, I kind of got maybe a shot at this?
Yeah, so right away. So being eight, I was playing on a 10 and under basketball team, and I was named one of the captains. And that obviously had a lot to do with maybe my ability, my physical abilities, but my coaches would tell me it was my leadership. You know, I kind of had a natural ability to lead people, have people follow, and, you know, and win, you know. And so to, you know, kind of check those boxes at such a young age, you know, I didn't recognize all that right away, but to have adult coaches and mentors recognize that and support me in that way, that's where it got started. And then I would be remiss to point this out. One thing that started right away, because I'm kind of like, you know, foreshadowing for it, but back then our coaches were dead serious about, you know, if you're going to play, you got to have the grades too. And so, maybe we were lucky, but, you know, it was a no-nonsense kind of approach to it. You couldn't just play and not have grades. And so I'm so thankful to our coaches to care about us as students, even at young, with none of us really knowing what those future implication was. But that definitely planted a lot of seeds. And, you know, I credit that a lot to like my pivot later in life, because I always had that foundation, if that makes sense.
Yeah, wow. So that's huge. So obviously from the beginning, there was that basketball is obviously a beautiful thing, but there's you had a lot of stewards around you and a lot of people, mentors that said, let's pair it with education. Let's pair it with not just focus on the one side of things.
Yeah, I mean, it's silly to think, but it was literally like, you know, you had to show your report card to play in a community basketball league. And it was just that straightforward, you know. So you either had your A's, B, and C or C's to play, and anything below that, you know, sorry. And that just, you know, I don't know. I took that serious. It was a legitimate threat, and I didn't want to not play. So hitting the books, you know, meant as much to me starting back then as it does now.
Wow. Awesome. All right. So now that you're in like kind of the middle school, the high school range, you explained to us how, you know, grades were also important. What was the next step in your journey from there?
Yeah. So I played pre AAU ball. It was called AAU ball, but this was more at the national level where it was, you know, it wasn't the, you know, the shoe sponsorship, et cetera. It was more about car, you know, fundraising with car washes, bake sales, door to door, you know, handheld, you know, at the gas station. Hey, you want to pump your gas, you know, all that stuff. But with that AAU, you know, kind of team and that kind of, you know, blue collar approach to it, we got exposed to life outside of Washington, D.C. And even though we're in D.C., for those folks on the East Coast, you know, New York is just a 4-hour drive, and, you know, and it's not so much a 4-hour drive, you're passing different states, et cetera. But for us to go up to New York in the summers and play against, you know, storied AAU programs like the Gauchos and Riverside, you know, I mean, we were young and, you know, just full of ourselves, but we definitely knew about those organizations, and to go up there and play against those organizations and be competitive. And my recollection says we won every time. So like that definitely was a badge of honor. And I think you'll appreciate this, Paxton. Always when we leave New York, we would stop at the White Castle Burgers. And so, like I say White Castle is the same as In-N-Out today, but that was our treat. You win a tournament, you get to stop at White Castle.
There's only one. Yeah, for those that don't know, there's only one on your way out of town, and it's a rite of passage. It really is. Like if you can get to it, and it stomps on In-N-Out and everything else. Like I think it's because it's so minimal. Like, you can't really find White Castle a lot. I think that's why that movie did so well, because like they're so few and far between. But in New York, there's just that one there. It's not the Bronx. It is the Yonkers. So good.
But back to your question, you know, that kind of exposure, and that was obviously a memorable experience, but I'll go back to that exposure, which was, it just kind of gave me, you know, some reflective points of like, man, like there's literally something outside of DC, whether it's basketball, and just, you know, because we would fundraise, we would stay in hotels. And so, you know, a lot of credit to our coaches and mentors at this time, just laying this foundation around exposure, right? We wanted to treat these trips as, you know, young business professionals, you know, professionals, make sure that, you know, we had a dress code. I mean, all this stuff that we take for granted today. I mean, those seeds were planted, you know, a lot early for me. But as I continued to grow as an exceptional athlete, you know, and had that academic, you know, kind of threat too, you know, I was convinced even at a young age, it was clear to me that I wanted to go to college, right? Like there was no ifs, ands, and buts about it. And I was able to, like, you know, chase that dream or goal, you know, seriously, because I knew I had talent, but, you know, I could just see, you know, other people before me, whether, you know, Georgetown, University of Maryland, seeing those basketball players out there, I was like, look, that could be me someday. And I was dead serious about, you know, trying to do whatever I needed to do to pursue that.
Cool. So now that you've kind of got that vision, you've got what I'm seeing now on this side, which is really cool, that foundation, like you said, these seeds have been planted, and they've obviously kind of borne fruit later, and we'll get into that. But now that you kind of saw that vision of, I can definitely hang with some of the best, where did you commit to?
Yeah, so college-wise, so I ended up committing to UC Berkeley. So that got me out to the West Coast, hence where I'm at now. But there was a bigger decision before that was growing up again in the Clifton Terrace projects. I had to make a decision on a high school, and my high school that I decided to go to was St. Albans School for Boys. And so St. Albans was a prestigious you know, private school in Upper Northwest, the upper echelon of Northwest. And, you know, it was clear as day that I would be a minority, right? Going to from Clifton Terrace to St. Albans. So that was a big social, you know, economic adjustment for me culturally, et cetera. But I think, you know, making that decision going from eighth grade to ninth grade to that type of high school, you know, that was a big exposure point to, you know, just real world, you know, the politics of the real world, you know, people that are very influential, but it had such an outstanding academic reputation. I just, you know, had to believe that, you know, if I continue to develop my academic game, that whether basketball worked out or not, you know, I would have some legitimate options still to go to college.
Right. Okay. So work us through that kind of culture shock. So obviously that's a big jump, and, you know, and a lot of athletes' careers, the game tends to take us way outside of our comfort zone. It's just kind of where we live. And it's very rare that we get to stay close to home and play the game that we love. For me, it was straight to England, you know, on a one-way ticket. And it was, I didn't really know too many people out there. But so walk us through that little bit of that first kind of level of uncertainty, because before you kind of had some of the guys you came up with and it was familiar, even though you traveled outside of DC.
Sure.
Then all of a sudden you were out on your own. So walk us through that.
I mean, just the social aspect, right? So I'm going into this new environment, new friends. They come from different walks of life. And I'll just fast forward to like our first spring break. I remember at St. Albans, I'm just having a casual conversation with some of my new classmates / teammates. And, you know, my nickname in high school was War. You know, hey, War, what you got going on for spring break? And before I could answer, I was saying, like, I'm just going to take my ass back to the hood, you know, and just help out grandma, mom, you know, do what we do, you know. And before I don't know, I don't think I answered, but I think I said, I'm not sure, but like, what are you guys doing? And it was stuff like, we're going up to Vermont, we're going to our ski resorts, you want to come? I'm sitting there going like, oh my God, like, what happens if I say yes? I knew I couldn't afford it, but I also knew that it was coming from a, you know, innocent space from them to ask that question, but it put me in like, oh my God, like, I got to process all this in real time, keep a poker face, and just manage the situation. So I was like, yeah, you know what, I'm still undecided, but, you know, may want to consider, you know, hanging out with you guys. Let me go home, think about whatever. I go home and I just knew I couldn't have that conversation with my family because, you know, we just didn't have the resources and we had not historically grown up like doing anything outside of spring break, right? Like, I mean, it's just vacation and time off was like, I mean, it just wasn't even a concept, you know? So I know that's kind of a, you know, I call it like a macrocosm, but that was a big deal to kind of navigate that new space, you know? And so I had to go back and kind of deal with that. And one way of dealing with that was at St. Albans, I got connected and close with some teammates and their families, and they had, you know, took a particular interest in, you know, my personal development. I think they could sense that kind of, you know, just disparity, right? And without making it, you know, so obvious or embarrassing, you know, it would just be a overture of like, hey, you know, we're going to this, you know, destination, you should come, you know, happy to have you, you know, and just, it was just a different approach of like, I guess maybe assuming that, you know, I could, you know, pay my way or whatever, but it wasn't that burden of like, you know, this is the only way. I mean, they just try to make it as natural as possible. If you want to hang out with your friends, you know, as long as your parents are okay with this, you know, we can, you know, you can hang out with them. And so I started to take up some of my friends on some of that. And that was a whole nother exposure, like getting on a plane, going outside of DC to a vacation destination and just seeing how other people, you know, just lived, you know, that was so different from my upbringing. And so it was an education outside of hoop and like no other, you know? And again, to navigate that space and have success doing it, you know, I just knew I was better off for any challenge. So when I got to the decision to go to college, you know, I was independent thinker, you know, I was very confident. And so an opportunity to come out to the West Coast, which was, you know, so far from the East Coast, just wasn't a big deal. You know, the AAU travel and exposure, it got me comfortable with being, you know, seeing anything outside of DC. But I just was pretty grounded that, you know, I wanted to go to a good academic institution college-wise and play high-level basketball. And so Cal was a hot college at the time. They had Jason Kidd, you know, Lamon Mary, you know, we got some stars that were on the rise. And to have the opportunity to join a team and a school like that, I just could not say no.
Yeah. So saying yes at a younger age to some of these things that were a little uncomfortable, like taking people up on these offers, and then that created a whole new landscape of the vision of what you were used to. And then all of a sudden, sure. Wow, there's more possibility than what I'm accustomed to.
Sure. And I want to be clear, Paxton, I'm saying it was luck, right? You know, I'm saying to you in retrospect, I was saying yes to that, but I really wasn't. You know, it was just something presented to me, you're either doing it, you're not doing it, right? Yeah. So, but it wasn't a demonstrative, I'm saying yes or no. I just did those things and I learned on the fly. But like, you know, like I said, just to have the exposure to new cultures, new world, new thinking, you know, the elephant in the room around race relations, you know, socioeconomic considerations, it was a big deal. And I can be very honest and reflective of that. You know, that was just a solid foundation for me to even navigate waters at the collegiate level and now in the professional ranks.
So now you're in the college level. You dropped a couple names, J Kidd. Who else was there?
Yeah, so I was with, over my 4-year playing career, I played with Jason Kidd. I played with Sharif Abdul-Rahim. I played with Sean Marks, Ed Gray, Lamon Mary, Tony Gonzalez, and two roommates, Michael Stewart and Randy Duck. All these individuals that I mentioned, you know, they were exceptional athletes, mm-hmm. great people. We're still close friends to this day. But I want to be clear, all those people that I mentioned, with the exception of Randy Duck, they all made it to the NBA. You know, that was my goal too, you know. So, but I just think I had such a good rapport and a relationship with all of them, just as, you know, teammates and brothers, if you will. You know, I was, you know, really proud of them, you know, best, biggest cheerleader of their success. Mm-hmm. But they kind of brought me along with their journey and experience, you know, like I was a part of the entourage when they got to the next level, you know. So, but while we were in college, you know, make no mistake about it, we wanted to win and compete. We wanted to compete and hopefully win a national championship, challenge for conference tournaments. And that was a reality for us. You know, we were ranked nationally, had a lot of hype on campus. Recruiting was just super competitive. So I'm proud to say at one time in my life, I was kind of a big man on campus. And I know that's, I love saying that now because of the implications of it, but it was so cool. It was so cool to, you know, have that, all that excitement in a college environment and knowing that, you know, the community was behind you, meaning your, you know, your fellow classmates and being on national TV. I mean, you know, I was living the best life at that time.
Wow. So I know at the beginning of this, there was that kind of common thread that was, or seeds that were planted into you by your coaches growing up in regards to education. So mm-hmm. now you're in this environment where there's a little bit more glamour, it's a little bit more flash, there's some hype around the people that you're around. How did you stay grounded to that foundation that was built, you know, through college and maybe not get swayed by, you know, NBA, maybe I can leave
sure.
here. What did that look like?
Yeah, so to your point, I go back to my AAU days, just taking academics seriously. St. Albans was just outstanding academic institution, no nonsense. So the schoolwork wasn't a problem. You know, I always tell people when I got to Cal, you had people that, you know, were at the Lawrence Livermore Lab making nuclear bombs, and you had people on affirmative action. I was somewhere in between, so I was happy. You know, I had I could kind of just settle in just with my academic foundation. But again, even my coaches in college, you know, they were definitely, you know, invested in my personal interests. If I wanted to pursue certain academic, you know, goals, they supported that. And of course, I had to reprioritize that just around practice. I mean, your scholarship was triumph. So I think I wanted to be an engineer major. That conflicted with practice. It was just a non-starter trying to have that conversation. Well, coach, I can miss practice for some engineering class. No, what was not happening. So you had to learn about, you know, that reality, right? Scholarship or, you know, you want to be a engineer, you know? But no, like I go back to high school and, you know, my AAU coaches, you know, taking academics seriously, serious, so that when I got to college, I had that foundation and I could, you know, manage the expectations in the classroom and compete at the high level still.
Gotcha. All right. So now you're in college. what's the next the next level? Walk us through, you know, the decision to play pro. I know that you got into the league, and then you also played overseas.
Yes. Okay. So, you know, of course, you know, I had the credentials coming out of high school. I was a high school All-American, you know, athletically and academically. And I got a lot of academic awards with some of those teammates I mentioned. So and we joke now that, like, I definitely helped out GPA along the way. But, you know, it got serious towards my senior year. You know, we had a coaching change. A new coach came in, and, you know, the program was still like a very popular national recognized program. And we had a deep tournament run, went into the Sweet 16. And so now you have all this hype of like, all right, you know, like, what does this mean once that last horn sounds, right? You know, and so just like all those guys I mentioned, some of them already left before, you know, Jason only played 2 years. But, you know, I wanted to enter the draft and, you know, wanted to, you know, play in the NBA. I was not drafted, but I did get an opportunity to attend the Portland Trailblazers mini camp. And that was just awesome, you know, like literally to land in Portland, have someone, you know, with your name, like, you know, waiting for you. You get to your hotel, you got an envelope with the NBA letterhead on in there. It's just cash for your per diem. You're just like, man, I remember calling my mom. I was like, Mom, I made it. Like this is awesome. But then to get out there and you got some vets out there like Rasheed Wallace, you know, you're just like, man, like this is crazy. I'm about to try to compete with him, not for his job, but, you know, he's a part of this kind of competitive camp. So reality set in, you know, like, I mean, they had, you know, I think they had Jeff McGinnis, who turned out to be a longtime pro. You know, obviously I mentioned Rasheed Wallace. But I want to say Stephon Marbury. Like, yeah, just some potential Hall of Famers that, you know, that weren't Hall of Famers there. But it was a very competitive, you know, mini camp. And, you know, the cream rose to the top. You know, I wasn't that talented to, you know, make that team, but I still wanted to play. And so I pursued a career overseas in Europe. And so I was in Europe for 2 years, and I played in Portugal, Poland, and Spain over like an 18-month period. So I kind of rounded up to 2 years. And I don't know if most people know the journey of an overseas player, but you play, you know, you can probably relate to the timing, right? You leave in like September, October, and you're gone to March, you know, May of next year. And you repeat and rinse that. So after that second year, you know, I wanted to continue to play, and I started to, you know, play in these, like, you know, pickup leagues or adult men's leagues just to stay competitive. And I met a local high school coach in the Bay Area who wanted me to help out with his local high school team. He had some prospects, wanted me to assess them, evaluate them. I had no idea that would get me into coaching, but that's where it started. For me, coaching wise, and I didn't know, but that would be my first transition, kind of hanging up the playing career to pursue coaching. Now, it's easy to say this now. Had I had the same opportunity again, you know, more like anything else, yeah, you know, I would have pursued playing to the very end and then kind of transitioned into coaching. But coaching was a natural transition. I think I pointed to it earlier, you know, just with my proven leadership skills. So I was just helping out this high school coach during the summer season. He took another opportunity, another job, and I had developed enough rapport with the parents and student athletes of that high school at the time. And I applied for the head coaching job myself, and I won. And so that was my first, you know, coaching experience. You know, you get to coach these young people as a head coach. Good luck, you know. So,
so that you come back from Europe, you get that coaching opportunity. What was the resistance? You said something interesting, like looking back, yeah, I probably would have kept playing, but there was obviously a big decision there. Like, okay, sure. I'm going to hang my, I would say boots up, but like, you know, hang my sneakers up and then go into coaching. What was that decision like? Was it an easy transition, or was it like kind of trying to keep feet in both arenas?
Yeah, I definitely had feet in both arenas. And I know you can relate to it being a soccer player. You know, it's peer pressure, it's peer recognition. And, you know, like, I was an exceptional athlete. So, you know, making it to the pro, you know, it has some psychological implications, right? Like, you know, like everybody was counting on me from my community, man, you know, just thought of me as a, you know, good high school player, college player. You know, how can you not make it to the pros, right? So it was always that kind of like, internal conversation. What is a plan B? And I think it's safe to say, you know, even at my high school and college levels, you know, that just wasn't, I mean, it was presented to us, but it just wasn't overemphasized. You know, you either made it or you didn't. And so I was definitely in that, like, oh man, I may not make it. What am I going to do? So coaching just seemed to be, you know, fun, right? I still was in the game. I was still competitive, you know, when I got the opportunity to be a head coach, you know, because you have to then develop people, you have to, you know, compete to win. And that was a whole, like, you know, like a new way of learning, you know, how to compete, you know, but staying in the game. So, but I think I was ready for it, you know, with my position being a point guard, you know, on some competitive teams where I had to lead people, coaches trusted me to make, you know, adjustments and calls. So I kind of understood from some experience of, like, you know, making adjustments, you know, pushing buttons, et cetera. So I think it was a good extension for me, but make no mistake about it. You know, I wanted to play. I wanted to play. And so this was definitely settling into a secondary career, if you will.
Yeah. Okay. So now you made this kind of transition and you're coaching high school basketball, senior head coach. Work us through, you know, before we just to give some context to this, before we had this chat, we had a call before, and you're explaining to me an opportunity that you saw to be filled in the industry itself, where you could actually help people get close to the game and not be an athlete. Sure. So from that point of you becoming a head coach, when did the light bulb go off? What was that happened that made you go, oh, maybe I can try and help some people get closer to the game without them, you know, going through the path that I went through as an athlete?
Yeah, great question, Paxton. So that would have been my next career change, because I left from being a high school head coach, mm-hmm, to become a Division I assistant coach. And in that role, being a Division I assistant coach, you know, my role was like the video coordinator, academic coach, right? So, mm-hmm, I had to, in that role, embrace technology. And so I was introduced to this specific performance analysis platform that I had to learn, had to be taught. And my job was to, you know, collect film on our team, the opposing teams, break it down, you know, take input from my coaches, know how to set up, you know, a projector to summarize the game after a breakdown, a couple of clips. And so when I started to, you know, dive into that, you know, some light bulbs went off to me that, like, wow, like, you know, like this was amazing. I had always been like a closet techie, if you will. Mm-hmm. So to put my hand on some technology, and I made the connection that this technology was really tapping into a deeper understanding for me of, you know, how to explain the game, right? You know, of how to manage, you know, the game doing technology, you know, and no better way than to do it around performance, right? So you had to, you know, be able to break down film and have objective and subjective, you know, film sessions with players and coaches, and just to see, like, how that affected our team, you know. I think it brought us closer, you know. I think people could, you know, see firsthand, you know, how did we do well or not so well against a game plan? How can we change that and have that all, like, digitally catalog, but more importantly, managing that? All types of light bulbs went off in my head that, like, wow, like this seems so natural to me that I was able to do that. But make no mistake about it, it just was, you know, the exposure piece, right? That was the job I had to do. I embraced it, but I saw, like, man, this, if others could do this that wanted to get into coaching and didn't have, like, my playing pedigree, like, this is a no-brainer. This is a no-brainer.
Right. Gotcha. So what did you do with that next? What doors did you open?
Yeah, so when I was the video coordinator at the University of San Francisco, I took I got a promotion and left University of San Francisco, and I went to Morgan State University in Baltimore, Maryland, and I was the associate head coach. And the head coach at Morgan State was my college head coach, Todd Bozeman. He was from Washington, D.C., and, you know, he wanted me to recruit me to his staff out in Baltimore. And so when we got to Baltimore, we did not have the resources that we had at the University of San Francisco. So we had to have those, you know, coaching conversations. Like, we don't have those resources, but what do we need to prioritize around recruiting, et cetera? And I remember raising both hands, like, coach, you know, one way it's going to keep us, you know, really competitive, you know, state of the art is that we have to invest in technology, right? You know, this specific video analysis platform, it made such a difference. And, you know, my coaching career, I really think we can, it can help us, you know, teach our system to these players, hold them accountable. And I'm so convinced we're going to be competitive. And so he said, I trust you, I believe in you, go for it. And when he said, go for it, that's when we realized we didn't have money. It's like, man, we're at Morgan State with a limited budget, you know, how are we going to pay for this? But that's when we tapped into the Jason Kidds and Sharifs, you know, our, you know, celebrated, you know, teammates and alumni from Cal to chip in and help pay for that. So they made some donations to the program. And literally that first year at Morgan State, we were competing for the NCAA tournament. And that was so, you know, so tied into like our investment in the technology piece. And so again, to bring that staff that was brand new to like, you know, the technology sphere, you know, I just saw this bigger picture, you know, of like, okay, like if Morgan State could get turned around and we were all invested in technology, you know, what it like literally, what if I could do that for other coaches? And so that was probably, you know, kind of like a motivation for me to leave coaching after that first year. Join this technology company because I really felt, I just saw the value of these skills that, you know, anyone can navigate this platform, you know, could be a better coach, right? And could have a career not necessarily planned. And so when I left coaching, I worked for this company, developed some, you know, some sales skills, and they put me in charge of selling this technology to other college programs and mainly the NBA. So my journey with selling this product to the NBA was able to successfully sell it to 29 of the 30 teams. And for your audience, there's one team to this day that still has not bought this platform. And I'll just say they're owned by Mark Cuban. So if anyone could get me on Shark Tank to, you know, bargain with him, I would come out of retirement to close that last deal.
We know some people. We know. It'll get out to the right ears. You heard it here first. That's what's up. Do they get a commission, like a finder's fee or what?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, 50-50. You have it recorded here. Yeah, I will not renege on that.
Yeah, they'll be working for sure. All right. So now you're with this technology company. You obviously saw that there's a way to kind of get, I mean, you're working directly with the NBA, 29 or 30 teams. There's this opportunity. Before we jump into team, there's a step before that in how you kind of open up a door for younger athletes, younger students to maybe use the technology and get close to the game. What was that about?
Yeah, so thank you for that, Paxton. So while I was at Sports Tech, that was the company at the time selling Sports Code, which was the technology, and having success selling it, I became just a trusted resource for NBA coaches, front office people that, you know, if I could throw someone's name in a hat as they were opening up positions in the video room or, you know, player development, you know, some of these coaches positions where the game was evolving, where you had to have some technical skills, you know, I had some say into maybe who could get considered for that. So that was another light bulb moment for me to understand that, you know, platform that I had or trust I had. And I really was very unapologetic to, you know, maybe focus on minorities that, you know, I felt like just needed, you know, some help getting connected, getting exposed. And so I was able to broker that by anyone that wanted to do that. I would give them access to our Sports Code platform, train them in my own way with a deep understanding of the NBA workflow and what it would take, like bare minimum, to navigate this platform, but obviously be open to be taught how a specific team wanted to navigate it. So proud to say had success helping over about 90 people that clearly were in the college age or older break into the ranks. And to this day, a lot of them that, you know, broke into the ranks did elevate to NBA head coaches, general managers. And so it just opened up this unbelievable network. And so that was my initial pivot of like, you know what, I want to do even more. I want to get it exposed to younger people so that they're not just getting to college and recognizing these opportunities. Why not expose them in high school? And they could, you know, you can't necessarily jump from high school to the pros, but you can go from high school to college doing this. And the more exposure you get to something you think you want to do, I just think you're better off for it. And then obviously I had the vision, how can I streamline this process? Because I have all the self-awareness that, you know, I was able to make it, but it was a windy road, like it wasn't straight. And so if I could straighten that road or, you know, make it a direct pathway, I wanted to own that.
Right. Okay. And now in comes team, right? This is, so you've kind of opened up the door for about 90 odd people that have shot through the ranks in the professional game and they're close to it. Work us through your organization team, and you got a great tagline, which is right in line with the cool down conversations, where the love of the game can take you.
Sure.
So talk us through that.
Yeah. So team, you know, I had to spend some time. It's like, you know, I have an 11-year-old daughter. So just like, you know, coming up with a name for your child, like it's a big deal. Mm-hmm. You have to have some consideration if you want to start an organization. So team made sense because of the acronym, you know, team already knows sports and, you know, you're part of a team. So that's pretty straightforward. But to break it out, the acronym, it's actually technology exposure with access to mentoring. So I really thought that really spoke to the core of what I wanted this to be about. And that was to get people exposed to technology, you know, teach them, you know, the STEM concepts related to, you know, technology, give them access to mentoring, which is that extensive network that, you know, predated team, mm-hmm. you know, and really make it about, you know, job placement or career exploration, you know. So that was the, you know, the mission from day one. And so we're ready to hit the ground running, having that, you know, kind of network built in of support. And so if I'm introducing this to a young person, you know, I had tangible assets to really just, you know, over show or demonstrate like this was real, right? Like if you put your time in, these are legitimate possibilities. And it's one thing for me to say it, but to have these young people to be able to, you know, talk to a Sean Marks or Sharif Abdul-Rahim or Jason Kidd, or more importantly, have one of them be hired directly by them. You know, I think that just, you know, that just got people's attention on day one coming to our program. So that's how team got started. And we've been able to start there and really just grow our reach and influence. And now our reach and influence is really focused on, you know, this kind of tagline, where the love of the game can take you, right? So, you know, just like I was passionate about playing, passionate about being at the next level, I did not make it, but I did make it to the next level in the tech sense, you know, being able to sell solutions, you know, to sports teams, but then to see the need and the demand for, you know, tech professionals, right? And I just knew like a lot of people that have passion for sports like myself could, you know, connect to these opportunities and quite frankly, do a lot better than I did because they would just know more, you know, have more resources.
Quickly, the ultimate goal, if you were to give me the, apart from the tagline, where the love of the game could take it, but the ultimate goal of team moving forward, what do you think that is?
Yeah, I just think it's just the start of a very needed conversation. Ultimate goal is to really, at the youngest age possible, and I want to say 14, which just is kind of like that bullseye age. Mm-hmm. I want young people to know no later than 14, that there are career opportunities available for them at the intersection of sports and technology, right? And I want to be clear that these jobs are not playing jobs, but they are jobs that, you know, support the players on the field or the court, right? Like these video coordinator roles, you know, marketing, you know, you see stuff like NBA playoffs and you see, you know, telestrations at half court, you know, to the audience. There's someone behind the scenes that has to do that. And so I just have this vision that if you're 14 or so, like, you know, we owe it to these young people to expose them to like those possibilities, but more importantly, connect them to career professionals that want to help them and bring them along. And I thought this was just an untapped, you know, vision, if you will, for underrepresented communities. I mean, that was just so obvious to me that just didn't exist. And so I was proud to put 2 feet into the space and continue to grow and learn from others as how I can do more. So the last part to that is that I'm interested in people having those career touch points, want to explore, but my destination isn't about people just landing sports jobs out of this. You know, I just think, you know, the curriculum we've been able to develop really speaks to, like, you know, higher concepts that are, you know, present for, you know, tech jobs as we know it, like around data collection, processing data, coding, you know, building visual dashboards. So it's a way to connect, you know, sports, you know, if you will, and the skills needed to do these, you know, tech jobs mm-hmm. to academia. So I think we've kind of got a nice recipe of how we present ourselves, and people that come through our program have had success with, based on their experience, right? And based on their experience, I think it's dictated where they've landed. They want to do sports, they want to do something else. You know, we're fine with that, but.
Gotcha. So there's that ability to, when you give them enough education, what I'm hearing is, okay, maybe they came into it with sports, but now they got rapport in other tech spheres, and they can kind of hold their own in those kind of conversations. Maybe it's not with specifically like an NBA team or a sports yeah. team, but they can work with, you know, wherever technology is needed, they can kind of hold their own in that space.
Yeah, and I call the reason I picked age 14, that's usually when you start high school, and I always, you know, I've learned these business buzzwords, you know, so what's the return on investment here, right? So I'm saying, yeah, someone as young as 14 could come to our program, you know, take one of our course offerings. He or she just literally could leave with just that one touch point with some experience to do some of this work as a high school intern, right, for their sports teams, or they could do it as a high school job, you know, working for a data company like Salesforce or whatever that may be. And so that's really the connection. And then, you know, we talk about how we had to, like, you know, think about onboarding people. You know, you have to deal with assumptions, or, you know, prove assumptions, right? That's the hypothesis in this. And so I had to be grounded to understand, like, what if someone didn't have a sports background? So, you know, you have to be, you know, aware of that. But, you know, how are you going to relate it to someone that has a sports background and doesn't have a sports background? So that's been the fun part, to get with some smart people in a room, you know, settle on a curriculum that can, you know, have those high touch points, but really point to, like, that journey where, you know, we're proud to say there's high retention in our program, and there's high interest for people taking a next step, you know, like, oh my God, I didn't know about this. I want to do X, Y, and Z because of this. And that's all I, you know, that's why I'm here. And I just want to do more of it. So there's no secret to that. I just want to do more of it.
Gotcha. So let's say that there's an Anwar coming up right now and they want to play.
Yep.
And based on knowing what you know now, based on you obviously had the same passion to play, and it created so much opportunity, and you allowed that opportunity to happen, and you made some pretty hefty decisions. It didn't just kind of all fall into your lap. There was some consciousness around it for sure. What would you say to that athlete now that wants to pursue the game at the next level?
Honestly, I would encourage them. I would feel that passion, like, absolutely pursue it, right? That's what you believe in, you know, put the time in with the training, you know, research, whatever it may do to make it to the next level, you know, if you want to pursue it physically. Mm-hmm. The only thing I would challenge that young person is that, you know, just be aware of other opportunities, right? You know, go to, you know, workshops that have to do with coaching around performance analysis, data analytics, maybe talk to front office people that just dealt on the personnel side of sports. And that's kind of part of this vision too, Paxton, is that, you know, these AAU tournaments are such a big draw for these kids mm-hmm. in a small but big way. Like, while those kids are captivated in those environments, would love to see more of, like, classroom options mm-hmm. while kids are playing, like, literally on tournament days, right? Like, you get to play, but you do some classroom stuff as well. And I just think that, you know, what we've designed would be such a natural fit in that ecosystem, right? You're not asking someone to leave that playing facility, go across town, get in the classroom, come back. Like, no, right off the court, you have a classroom and you have, you know, industry professionals that have that diversity of skills or jobs that have nothing to do with playing, just there to talk and mentor these young people and just to make sure that they understand that, like, there are just other considerations if they don't make it. So that's, in all seriousness, Paxton, I mean, that's to me, that's not rocket science, but that is what I'm focused on now. Like, how can I get that young or the next Anwar to at least want to listen or be exposed to something else outside of just making it physically.
Right. So just kind of creating that awareness, like it's possible to do both, right? It's possible.
Absolutely. I mean, like literally talking to someone in sports medicine, right? Because sports medicine, you know, I mean, that person could give you some insights as to like, if you want to make it Paxton or Anwar, this is how I would recommend you train, right? And just to have those conversations of how rest matters and your nutrition. And so it is about being educated, but I think, you know, what makes it easy is that the focus is already there. You know, I think these young people are so focused on the end goal. It's just us, you know, showing them there are other ways to get to the end goal as well, or have an understanding of what goes into supporting them along that journey and the goal. And I know I didn't have that through my journey. And so if I could provide that for others, I think that's a big deal. And again, I want to do more of it.
Yeah. Which leads me to my next question. What are you most excited about moving forward? So you've got the team has just kind of had some breakthrough. You can actually tell us what happened there.
Sure.
But what are you most excited about in the industry and what you're seeing happen through team in your personal life? You know, what's going on?
Yeah, and in no particular order, but I'll say we were recently recognized by the NBA Foundation as one of the inaugural grantees, where the NBA is taking a significant investment in community organizations that, you know, focus on young youth between the ages of 14 and 24 of some of the stuff that we already do, which is around career exploration, job placement, and just kind of ongoing mentoring. We, you know, naturally check all those boxes. We just happen to have technology that all the NBA teams use. So we're just a natural extension of their, you know, initiatives. And let's not, you know, kid ourselves. That platform they're bringing to that just is really helpful for us to have exposure and have other people learn about what we do. And because of that, you know, that support and recognition, you know, we're looking to scale what we do. Like, we're just based in Oakland, California. You know, my goal is to have this in every state, you know, in 2 years, you know, like at minimum this program. And again, I told you in the beginning, the audience packs, and we started in this after school space. But in being in after school space, the irony is that we actually miss out on a lot of student athletes because of their sports commitment, right? You know, wow. You know, even in high school, you know, if you're a basketball, football, soccer player, you know, it's tough to negotiate with your coach that you're going to take this sports analytics class, you know, like we have to rearrange that, right? Yeah. So for us to now work with schools where we can offer this class at a school site during a school day, and have our curriculum, you know, accredited or, you know, endorsed by the state to be an elective for high school and, you know, junior college students, you know, that's just been a game changer, because I think it creates a model where, as I mentioned, we're trying to go to all 50 states. That model is the proof of concept, you know, so now you can have corporate supporting, you know, community through school and education, and it all can be traced to, you know, economic upward mobility, you know, job placement, internships. And I know I just said economic mobility. Here's an example of, you know, I want the audience to hear this. So most, you know, I'm going to interview you now. All right. So what would you say the national average is for minimum wage throughout the country? If I had to put you on the spot.
$12.50.
Okay. $15. And I don't know it, to be honest, but you're right. I think it's between $12, $15 range, depending on the state, right? But so let's say 12, right? Uh-huh. And so I think a lot of times, you know, and this is a big political conversation of like, how can we raise the minimum wage, right? We want to get, you know, people that want to get in the workforce working, but to be able to make a living, right? You know, and I think it's tough to say you can make a living making minimum wage, you know, and a lot of times those opportunities don't match someone's education. You got college graduating out of high school, getting jobs, they're starting off minimum wage. Right. But coming through our program as an example, developing those skill sets in a small but big way, Paxton, you're at the job market, you know, really to command an hourly rate of like $25 an hour, right? And so I just think that is so aspirational and should be celebrated, right? So we can do more of that with these young people as young as 14, making $25 an hour starting out in the industry that, you know, demands that. Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't we want to have, you know, young people see that as a legitimate opportunity and provoke their entrepreneurial spirits, right? And I don't know if you know that you have the skills and you can command that in the market. I think, you know, human nature would tell you, why couldn't you command more, right? But if you're going into a market where minimum wage is kind of already set and it's kind of a ceiling, you know, I just think that that can be, you know, kind of, you know, repressive, if you will. So again, we are front and center trying to have those direct conversations of like, these are legitimate outcomes that community, corporate, you know, MBA in a sense would be corporate. You know, we need to focus on these type of, you know, opportunities for our communities.
Wow. All right. So that kind of wrapped up how excited you are in regards to the opportunity that's actually being created, because now the ball's, forgive me for this cliche, but the ball is literally in your students' courts, where it's sure. Like they come through your course, they have a little bit more rapport in these spheres. And all of a sudden it's like, I can kind of challenge that status quo and say, listen, I'm actually worth a little bit more here, and to create a living out of that instead of just being told this is what we can do. And that is exciting to you in regards to, it changes that narrative around, I don't need to settle for the minimum wage. I now have a skill set where I can hold my own in this arena, and the demand for it is a lot higher, and I can actually ask more for what I'm worth than just take what they're giving me.
Absolutely. And again, that's the message I want to leave people, that, I mean, we are so proud that we have an opportunity to voice that, share that, you know, overstate it, but really have some real examples. And to that point, Paxton, I want to, you know, share with the audience too, is that the process of coming through our curriculum, right? You know, you're not, it's, you know, yes, we talked about, you know, some outcomes where you can have the skill set to command that type of money, you know, pay in the workforce. But probably more importantly, you're developing these kind of, you know, critical thinking skills, you know, you are relating, you know, tech or STEM concepts through a sports prism. And so I just think that gives you the confidence that if you can, you know, break down a basketball or soccer game and, you know, have a presentation around at high level, to me, that's no different than, you know, kind of these fundamental or foundation skills needed in these business environments, right? How are you going to take data sets and make meaning of it, you know? But we really try to relate that in a sports way, build people's confidence like anything else. You know, being an athlete yourself, you have confidence. The natural thing for you is to get more reps, right? You want to, you know, keep feeding it. And so we can do that again in a non-playing sense, and, you know, sign me up over and over again, or sign team up, you know, to help spearhead those conversations, because there's a lot of funding in our communities to get young people more into STEM and, you know, coding, whatever. But I think, you know, there's some missing components around the foundation piece. A lot of us can't even relate to it, right? So we can use sports to, you know, relate some of this, you know, again, that's what we're here for. We want to scale and we want to do more of it.
Awesome. Where can we find you?
We are online. Our IG and Twitter handle is We Are Team Inc. So that's WEARETEAMINC. And our website is weareteaminc.org. So you can find us online. Please follow us, tap in, and please reach out if you're interested in joining our program, supporting our program, and just learning more.
Yeah, awesome. And then don't forget that Mark Cuban deal. Either. So
yes, 50% commission.
Hey, that's what's up. Anwar, thank you so much for joining in today. You're obviously a pioneer in the industry. You've used basketball in a tremendous way to kind of give back to, plugging the gaps in the industry that you saw were missing on your way up. So credit to you. It was an honor to meet you and to work with you and to listen to your story. I'm sure that there's, you know, we could be on here for an hour talking about, you know, if we unpacked each and everything, but I just wanted to honor you. I wanted to thank you for the work that you're doing. And I can't wait to see what happens in these next 2 years. You heard it here first. Team wants to be in every state. So, you know, it's recorded. It's up there with the Cuban Commission. We'll call it the Cuban Commission.
Cuban Commission.
but in 2 years, you're going to be doing a lot. So I just want to thank you for being here and being so positive and the work that you're doing.
No, Paxton, thank you for sharing your platform. And obviously, I want to take out friends within my community and my network to support them as well. So I think what you're doing is as important, creating a platform and, you know, challenging our community, you know, participants, whether that's coaches or athletes and parents, just understand there's just promise out there that are, that can happen through basketball or soccer. You know, the more that we make awareness to that, I think the more we can take tangible action. So kudos to you and a big thank you as well.
Love it. All right, brother. Speak soon.
Okay. Take care.
Thanks for listening to another Cool Down Conversations episode. Through testimony and interviews, Cool Down Conversations is geared to help equip this next generation for a more purposeful, heart-filled, and passionate career. If you like this episode, please feel free to share with friends and family. And if you have any questions at all, don't ever hesitate to reach out at PaxtonBallardINC@gmail.com. Yup. Yeah.